We're going to read from Joshua chapter 3. It's quite a long reading, and there's a point at which I'm going to say we're going to jump a few verses. Okay, so here we go. The Lord told... So the people have walked... If you remember the story of the people of Israel, they wandered around the desert for 40 years, and Moses died, and Joshua takes up the mantle of Moses, and the Lord says... Moses, my servant, is dead. Now then, you and all these people get ready to cross the land into the, cross the river into the land I'm about to give you. And he tells Joshua to be strong and courageous. Have I not commanded you? Be strong and very courageous. So this is kind of, that's the context. The Lord told Joshua, "Today I will begin to make you a great leader in the eyes of all the Israelites. They will know that I am with you, just as I was with Moses. Give this command to the priests who carry the Ark of the Covenant. When you reach the banks of the Jordan River, take a few steps into the river and stop there." So Joshua told the Israelites, "Come and listen to what the Lord your God says. Today you will know that the living God is among you. He will surely drive out the Canaanites, the Hittites, the Hivites, the Perizzites, the Girgashites, the Amorites and the Jebusites ahead of you. Look, the Ark of the Covenant, which belongs to the Lord of the whole earth, will lead you across the Jordan River. Now, choose 12 men from the tribes of Israel, one from each tribe. The priests will carry the Ark of the Lord of all the earth. And as soon as their feet touch the water, the flow of water will be cut off upstream and the river will stand up like a wall." So the people left their camp, came to cross the Jordan, and the priests who were carrying the Ark of the Covenant went ahead of them. It was the harvest season, and the Jordan was overflowing its banks. But as soon as the feet of the priests who were carrying the ark touched the water at the river's edge, the water above that point began bucking up a great distance away in a town called Adam, which is near Zarethan. And the water below that point flowed onto the Dead Sea until the riverbed was dry. Then all the people crossed over near the town of Jericho. Meanwhile, the priests who were carrying the Ark of the Lord's Covenant stood on dry ground in the middle of the riverbed as the people passed by. They waited there until the whole nation of Israel had crossed the Jordan on dry ground. Chapter 4. When the whole nation had finished crossing the Jordan, the Lord said to Joshua, "Choose 12 men from among the people, one from each tribe, and tell them to take up 12 stones from the middle of the Jordan, from right where the priests are standing, and carry them over with you, and put them down at the place where you stay tonight." So Joshua called together the 12 men he'd appointed from the Israelites, one from each tribe, and said to them, "Go over before the ark of the Lord your God into the middle of the Jordan. Each of you is to take up a stone on his shoulder, according to the number of tribes of the Israelites, to serve as a sign among you in the future. When your children ask you, 'What do these stones mean?' tell them that the flow of the Jordan was cut off before the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord. And when it crossed the Jordan, the waters of the Jordan were cut off. These stones are to be a memorial to the people of Israel forever." So the Israelites did as Joshua commanded them. Verse 14. "That day the Lord exalted Joshua in the sight of all Israel, and they stood in awe of him all the days of his life, just as they had stood in awe of Moses. Then the Lord said to Joshua, 'Command the priests carrying the Ark of the Covenant to come up out of the Jordan.' So Joshua commanded the priests to come up out of the Jordan. And the priests came up out of the river carrying the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord. And no sooner had they set their feet on the dry ground than the waters of the Jordan returned to their place and ran in flood as before. On the 10th day of the first month, the people went up from the Jordan and camped at Gilgal," which means the reproach has been rolled away. The reproach of the 40 years has been rolled away. "They camped at Gilgal on the eastern border of Jericho. And Joshua set up at Gilgal the 12 stones they had taken out of the Jordan. And he said to the Israelites, 'In the future, when your descendants ask their parents, what do these stones mean? Tell them, Israel crossed the Jordan on dry ground. For the Lord your God dried up the Jordan before you until you had crossed over. The Lord your God did to the Jordan what he'd done to the Red Sea when he dried it up before us until we had crossed over. He did this so that all the peoples of the earth might know that the hand of the Lord is powerful and so that you might know or might always fear the Lord your God. Long reading. Let's pray together. Lord, I pray that you would take us to the Jordan this morning. Amen. Amen. I'm going to say four things to you this morning. I want us to experience the story rather than just read it. Was that, me? Have you gone in? Ah, very good. Secondly, I want us to reflect that the story has fresh meaning for every generation. Thirdly, I want us to reflect upon our contemporary situation. And fourthly, I want us to ask, what does this story mean for us? And we're going to play this morning. Okay, we're going. I've been very impacted by something called godly play. Have you any of you heard of godly play? But it involves sand pits and play creatures and things like that. And the teacher will tell the story to the children, and they engage with the story with the sand. And then she asks, I'm not going to tell you what these questions are, but she asks them five what they call wonder questions. I wonder what this means. I wonder what the best bit is. I wonder what the word, you know, those sorts of wonder questions. And I am always astonished that children of the age of 5 and 6 can ask these questions, but we don't ask each other these questions. In other words, as adults, we've grown so used to sitting here and me spouting on that we've stopped asking questions for ourselves. I think we've got to shift that way of being and thinking. So first of all, we're going to tell the story. You should look worried right now. Right, those of you that are able, the first thing we're going to do is I want us to wander around the room. Okay? We're wandering around the room. What? Okay, so we're wandering around the room. Is this microphone on? Can I have a little bit more? Okay, so, and what's happening is we are wandering around the room like the people of Israel were wandering around the desert. Okay, they wandered around for 40 years. They wandered around. Idiots. 40 years wandering around the desert. Right, wherever you are, stop. Okay. Now, what do I need now? I need, let's have David. Right, David's going to be Joshua for us. Do you want to come forward, David? Right, big round of applause for Joshua. Okay. No, you just be Joshua. Yeah, you are strong and courageous. I'm sure you're strong and courageous. Right, here we have Joshua. And the people have all come, and we've come to the edge of the River Jordan. Okay? The River Jordan. We need some River Jordan. Hold on. The River Jordan. Here's the River Jordan. Okay. Can we have this young man? Because he looks like he can hold the river. No, we need you. No. No, we need you for another part, actually. Right, hold on. Is it Paul?
Yep.
Yeah, Paul and... Yeah, forget your name. Ian. Right, here we come. You take that end of the River Jordan. You take this end of the River Jordan. Okay, so... And what time of year is it? What did it tell us in the story? Harvest, and it was in flood. So the River Jordan was very high. And we've seen this on the telly this week, haven't we, in America? Okay, so the River Jordan is very high. Join with us, Paul, here. It's great, isn't it? You do this and you get to tickle people a little bit, and they go, don't talk to me. Right, okay, sorry about that, Joshua.
That's all right.
Just stood on Joshua. Do you want to go out that side, Joshua?
Yeah.
Okay, I'm going to move these out of the way. Okay, and the Lord said to, told Joshua that what we need is we've got to get some priests and the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord. So we need an Ark of the Covenant of the Lord. This will do. No, it won't, it's too small. Something box-like. Oh dear, this looks a bit dangerous, doesn't it? Bit small. Oh, I'll use this, hold on. Right, So we need four people. You'll do. Actually, two people will do. Okay. As it's so small. Okay, so the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord was a box that contained things like the Ten Commandments. It was covered in gold and had two angels on it, and it represented the presence of God. Okay, so the people came forward, okay, and they stepped into the River Jordan, and the River Jordan went splash like that, and they stood in the middle of the River Jordan, and all the people, now I want you all to cross, to physically cross the river and go round that way, and mind my computer, okay? Come back, that's it. Come across the River Jordan. So you're crossing the River Jordan right now, okay? No, the River Jordan's down. You're all right. Okay. Hold on. Keep going. Oh, there we go. Oh, we've got a receipt down there as well. I don't know what that's doing. Okay. And Joshua's... Where's Joshua gone? There you are. So we need 12 young men. But two will do. One young man there. Look, we've got... What, right.
The other one's coming.
Okay, can we have some older men as well? Can we have any men? Any men, come forward. Right, can you come and pick up a stone each? So Joshua told them to pick up a stone each, and off you go, and we're going to go over there, and we're going to put them down in a big pile over there, in a place called Gilgal. Ooh, nearly. Okay. And then what happens next? The water comes in and drowns them.
Yes.
Okay, so he tells these people that are carrying the Ark of the Covenant, step out of the water. Step out of the water.
Step out of the water.
On this side, okay? Yes. And then the water goes, shh. Right. Thank you. Big round of applause for everyone. That's so neat. Yes, yeah, yes. Let's throw it down there. Now, the question, and it's there in the scriptures, is why is this story there? Why is this story there? The story isn't there just to say, oh, that's a nice story. The parts of the story where, particularly relating to the stones, what's this business about taking stones out of the riverbed and putting them at Gilgal? What's the point? Do you remember what the point was? What's the point?
Remembrance.
And a remembrance of what?
Of the wonders of God.
Of the wonders of God, yeah? Anything?
The power of God.
The power of God? The fulfillment of the promise, deliverance. Yes, Joshua being the new leader. So what? This is what God had done for Moses in the past, but he was doing it for Joshua now. Now, what's really interesting about, and I think this is fascinating, if you ask the question, when did this story get written down? You don't know the answer to that, do you? And we don't know, we can only guess. But it's almost certain this story would have been passed down orally for generation upon generation. Possibly wasn't written down first for something like 500 years. But the version that we've got possibly wasn't written down for 800 years. Now, if we come down 800 years after the time of Joshua, which might be 1200, 1300 BC... we're coming to a time, what was happening in Israel, do any of you know what was happening in Israel about 600 BC? What? Captivity in Babylon, which is probably when it was written down, finally. when they're in, they've been taken out of Israel. The people have been ripped away from their temple where they worshipped God, and they're in a foreign land, and they're feeling desperately sad. And there's this story, and I imagine there's a little boy, 8 years old, and he turns to his dad. Dad, tell me that story. Tell me that. And he tells the story we've just done. He tells him that story. Dad, what does it mean? What does it mean? He says, son, you know, I think it means that there's always a hope for us of us returning to the land. And there might be a big river between us and our hope. But, you know, when we're faithful to God, you will find that God is faithful to us. When we take those first steps, the river will part. And we will see what God will do. 3,000 years later, I want to take you to a very different situation. To many, I don't know if you know this, but many of the slave songs that were written about what? About the River Jordan. When I go down to the river to pray, down by the River Jordan. What are those stories about? So they've taken this story from the past and they've made it real for them in the present. What does it mean for them in the present? For them, it could mean that actually no matter what happens to us, we can go through the waters of death and there is something beyond that. Hope beyond that. Or it could also have meant that actually as slaves, they were enslaved, but their hope, their dream was of going through the River of Jordan of slavery to a place of freedom. So we've got the original story. 800 years later, we've got the people in exile. 3,000 years later, we've got people who have been enslaved. A number of you, for generations as well, the river has also represented for people themselves going through death and the hope that we have of something beyond death and going through the River Jordan. But as a Baptist church, we should also know that there's a fantastic picture of baptism, isn't it? Going through the waters of baptism. I believe that this story has a message for every generation. But what do we face today? We've got to go. Hold on. Oh, what's going on there? Keep talking. There it is. Do you remember this picture? That was a good sermon. But if you've never seen this picture, it's a picture of Honduras and the Choluteca Bridge, and it was Hurricane Mitch. And Hurricane Mitch shifted the river so that the structure that had been built in the past was no longer fit for purpose. And I was talking about how culture has changed. I was trying to draw a comparison with where we are as Christians in this land at this moment in time. I'm going to show you a video clip now that will disturb you. It's a man of many of your generation. He's the theologian that is related to something called Fresh Expressions, but it will disturb you.
Go to any congregation on a Sunday morning, look at the age structure, and you know that in 20 years' time, the bottom drops out of the church. Statistically, that is the case, that the generation my age upwards, we all move on, and in 2030, if you look at the age structure of the church across the country, there is not many people left. The sociologist David Veras, he and a colleague did a study of belief and faith across Europe, And what they found was that in every country, every generation was less religious than the generation before. They attended church less often, they prayed less often, they had less belief. They use the phrase fuzzy fidelity. You know, you get a generation who's church going. The next generation has a sort of fuzzy fidelity, a fuzzy relationship to church. They're kind of supportive, but they're not really involved. Generation after that has much less commitment. Generation after that, virtually no commitment. They would say that the modern world has no room for Christian faith. No wonder the church is in decline. Others of us would say, well, maybe the problem is that the church hasn't adapted to this changing world. So it's a bit like the cinema audiences in the 1980s, which were declining. And a lot of people said, well, that's because of television. So inevitable that cinema attendance will decline. But the cinema owners and the managers, they took a different view. And they said, no, the problem is that if you look at these cinemas, they're dark, they're dingy, they smell, etc., etc. And so they completely revamped their buildings, they completely revamped the cinema experience, and attendance began to rise. Not a perfect comparison with church, but it demonstrates, I think, that it is possible for institutions that appear to be in decline to reverse the decline if they accept that there are things that they can do. Many of us would say that fresh expressions may be a sign of how it is that the church adapts, because what these new types of church are doing is they're much more based around people where they live their lives. You get them certainly in the residential part of people's lives, but you also get them in leisure centres, you get them in pubs and cafes, of course. Some are emerging in the workplace. And there is a hint there that we could see church reconnecting with whole swathes of life that it's become largely disconnected from, thanks to the Industrial Revolution. Before the Industrial Revolution, yep, church was right at the centre of the village. It was at the centre of work, the saints' days and the feast days, centre of holiday. Church was right at the heart of life. But with the Industrial Revolution, you had a separation between work and home, and church stayed with the home bit of life, and not much of church went with the work bit of life. In the 20th century, of course, you had the expansion of leisure. Church wasn't there either, wasn't particularly present in the political movements and the ecology movements. Well, church in every context, which is kind of what these fresh expressions are beginning to point to, suggests something rather different. First of all, I think there's a big room still for traditional forms of church. I think we don't live in a culture which is either or, we live in a culture that's both and. And people can be very modern in one part of their lives and very traditional in another part of their lives. So I would expect, and we see this already happening to some extent, I'd expect to see more and more people attending both new innovative types of church, but also more traditional forms of church. I came across a fresh expression. I wouldn't call themselves that, but they call themselves a heavy metal congregation. And they do something once a month with the Anglo-Catholic Church around the corner. Very interesting. Not what you'd expect, perhaps, but here you are, the new and the traditional fitting together. So that, I think, will be one part of the picture. Another part of the picture, I suspect, will be a polarization between the large and the small. I think we'll find lots of those small churches that are quite intimate and friendly in that kind of way. And then there'll be larger churches, 250, 500 people, 1,000, which have all the facilities you could ever want in terms of child provision for children and young adults and teenagers and masses of courses and all the rest for adults, and where there are terrific benefits because of their size. And I think you'll get both those. Fresh expressions may be in both those camps, who knows? Time will tell. I think the middle-sized churches, as we're already seeing, of 150, 120 people, I think they're going to continue to be squeezed. I think these new, fresh expressions, there are many more than we realise. some of the research that's been done now into some of the dioceses in Liverpool and Canterbury are showing that. My own experience is exactly the same. I keep bumping into people who are doing and involved in what we would call fresh expressions. They don't call it that. They're right under the radar, but there they are. So I think that there are many more of these new types of church emerging than we realize. I think that's a huge source of hope. But we could see many more if the existing church really wants to get behind it and support it. Big challenge is for existing church. Are they going to really put resources into this? If you don't put resources into something new, no one notices. But if you take away resources from something that already exists in order to put resources into something new, then everyone screams. So it's not surprising that existing church finds it really hard to put resources into these new forms of church. But we need training for the lay leaders of these churches. We need training for the clergy who kind of oversee these churches and link them up. We need resources. There is a huge amount we need to do if we're going to build on what is a grassroots movement. If we don't build on it, I think it'll happen anyway, but it won't happen nearly to the extent. But if we do build on it, then I think we could see a huge revival in the church.
I wonder what you thought of that. I heard that, and I thought, it was particularly the beginning part where he talked about 20 years' time that we hit a... Unless we tell the truth about this, we can't do anything about it. Now, what's exciting about you and the reason I dared to say that this morning is that you've gone somewhere. Look, what you've done this. You've reached this point of wanting to transform this build. I think transforming buildings is ever so important, but I want you to come with me. Now, out the door. Cold out here. That was always a possibility. Well done, this lady. Okay, let's come back. Let's come back to the story. So the story that we've heard is the people have had an option. They could wander round and round for 40 years, or they could cross the River Jordan into their hope. They had that option. They could have continued to wander round and round in circles. And who am I to say, but increasingly I think that there is a tendency among older churches to look inwards rather than outwards, is to focus upon themselves and to keep themselves going. But if imagine the River Jordan, there's the River Jordan. There is your River Jordan. And it's a massive river. It's a massive challenge. But what does the question is, what does this story teach us? I just want you to turn to people right near you. What does this story teach us about the problem that we face? If culture is out there, what does this particular story teach us? Have a go. Just chat to each other. Okay, you've talked for a lot. Right, I know I have given you no time at all, but what I wanted to do was to get a conversation going about this for me, if I'm honest, as I come here, I'm really glad that you're changing your building and you're doing stuff in there. But if we think that the thousands are going to come into us, into where we're already doing our thing, into church as we know it, I think we're deceiving ourselves. The challenge is to ask the question, how do we, I use the word incarnate, put flesh on what the Lord wants to do in this community? I don't know that answer, but I do know this. Is that when you take this story teaches us when you take a first step, and I think you have taken a first step because some of you go into the school, don't you? That's a great thing to. When you take those first steps, something begins to shift. This story also teaches us that when we do those things, God is profoundly present. That was the Ark of the Covenant thing. God isn't absent from us when we go out or into our workplaces, into our cafes, into our whatever. God is profoundly present there, and it's important. Actually, it's lovely that your previous minister is here today, because it's kind of like it's those are the stones from the past. What did God do in the past? Fantastic. Now, what's He going to do in the future? Because there's a somewhere here there is a river, and somewhere out there is a hope. And the Lord, I think the Lord challenges us to step beyond where we feel safe. You know, it's hard to walk in. We forget how hard it is to walk into buildings like this and to not wonder what on earth's going on here. I can imagine somebody would think that this morning. They would think that. Bless their hearts. But there's a challenge there, and there's a big challenge to start to reimagine this stuff about fresh expressions. You probably haven't heard about fresh expressions, but it's an enormous movement within the Anglican Church and the Methodist churches. And you will have heard of Messy Church. Messy Church is an example of a fresh expression. But where we get Messy Church wrong is we imagine Messy Church is a feeder club to our church. It's not. It was never intended to be that. Messy Church was always intended to be church in its own right, because it functions totally differently. People aren't used to coming into church, stand up, sit down, sing a few, all of that sort of stuff. We've got to reimagine what church looks like. Therein lies the challenge. We can go back in and sit down now. This will be another one of those services where you don't remember much that I've said, but you will remember that you went outside and you wandered around the church and you think, what was that all about? I pray that in years to come there will be some other stones. Stones that some other young people will have taken out of the river that you've been through and be able to put down somewhere to say, we put these stones down to remember what this generation did.
Colin, could I just say something?
Yes.
Excuse me for doing this, but...
No, you feel free.
Actually, the passage you chose today to preach on and bring to us, I don't think anyone here will remember, but I remember, because there came a day in, I think it was 1979, when we were wanting to build this church, and we've been promised the land in exchange for our chapel and schoolroom and cottages. And we had £3,000 and there were 30 of us. And we planned to come out on this site, and no houses were around, just a field, and plant a board which said, site of the new Seer Green Baptist Church. And I preached that morning on exactly the passage you preached on. And it was, the thing that was in my heart was, they got to the edge of the Jordan and the waters were there. And the command was, go into the Jordan, let the Ark of the Covenant go in. And I was really with them that day, and my heart said, Lord, couldn't you just part the Jordan a little before we walk in? Because we shall look so stupid walking into the Jordan and the water's not parted. We've £3,000, 30 members. And the call of this was, no, get the ark to walk into the Jordan and I'll part the Jordan. And so we came out here, and just a group of us, I've got a picture of it,
which
I brought, actually, of us standing on this site. Gold Hill came and joined us. And in the evening at sunset on May the 8th, we set up the sign and we claimed the site for the Lord. We took a little step.
And you put a stone down.
Yeah, as it were.
Yeah.
Yes. And the text that there is on the door, hitherto the on the vestibule, hitherto the Lord has helped us, and the Lord will provide. Yeah. But, sorry, excuse me.
No, isn't that lovely?
It was just such a coincidence.
Yeah, that's lovely.